Well, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here, and I'm really, really enjoying my stay here. I've been from the beginning of January, so I really appreciate the invitation from the organizers. For the very observant people, you may have noticed that actually I have changed not only the time slot at which I'm giving my talk, but also the title of my talk itself, in case you've checked it online. So this title is about probing with gravitational waves the early universe. The original title, actually, I had given to the organizers is about some problems with inflationary sectors that are only coupled to gravity. And the reason why I get to have two titles, or if you want, this is the only talk in which you get to choose what is your favorite title, because it really doesn't matter, since I'm going to be talking about the two ideas at the same time. So these are two ideas based on two papers. The first paper gives the original title, which is about these issues that I'm going to explain, about inflationary sectors, which only talk to gravity. And the second title is based on our ability to measure with gravitational waves some properties, the equation of a state of the early universe. So these topics, seemingly disconnected from each other, you would think so, actually, I'm going to argue that they are very connected. They are connected through reheating and gravitational waves from inflation. Okay? So the context is that of the early universe. I'm going to assume inflation took place, but I'm not going to care much about what is the model building behind inflation. All we really care about, and I think this was already emphasized by Adrian, is that given the upper bound, the current upper bound on the energy scale of inflation, of the order of God scale, there is of the order of 19 orders of magnitude in energy, spanning between the possible highest energy scale of inflation and the first moment in the expansion history of the universe, BBN, or just before BBN, of which we have really some actual observation. So there is a lot of room in this primordial dark age, and this is, I guess, why we are having this conference, no? To see how we can fill up that gap that actually can be really large. So part one of my talk is where I introduce what we call gravitational reheating, or at least the classical concept, the original concept of gravitational reheating. So any successful mechanism of reheating, whatever this mechanism is, it'll be successful whenever it brings up a universe dominated by a thermal ensemble of relativistic particle species. But if we know very little about the actual inflationary model behind inflation itself, much less we know about the actual connection between the inflationary framework and particle physics sectors. So typical speculation is that maybe there are some couplings between the inflationary sector and some particle species. This could be direct couplings to the standard model, or this could be perhaps what most people typically do, couplings to mediator fields, which eventually you hope will decay into the standard model somehow. Well, funny enough, there is another avenue that you can really consider, which is to think of a situation in which there is no such couplings. From the purest point of view of effective field theory, what I really mean by this is that there are very weak couplings, okay, whatever the strength of this, they are negligible in the time scale of which I'm interested. Okay? Now, I don't want to advocate this scenario that I'm going to present now as anyhow better or more appealing or interesting than considering couplings. I just want to do a scientific study, a quantification, of how can we do a possible logical, correct cosmic history if there is such a circumstance. And if we do so, then what are the consequences of this, whether we can test it somehow, okay? So the setup I want to consider is an inflationary sector, which is completely decoupled from other matter radiation sector. From now on, I'm going to refer to these guys as just radiation without specifying much about them. And then there is gravity, standard gravity, Einstein gravity. And the important thing here, as I was saying before, is that I'm going to consider there is no effective coupling between these two sectors, the inflationary sector and the radiation matter sector. So if we are in such a circumstance, still we need, of course, to excite somehow this radiation matter component, because we want to reheat the universe. And as I said before, that amounts to half a universe filled up by some fluid of relativistic species. So we need to excite the energy density of these guys, but it turns out, actually, as we learned yesterday for instance, from Andrew's talk, that inflation does the job quite naturally for us. In a huge variety of circumstances, which span from, for instance, quantum fluctuations of light degrees of freedom, or quantum fluctuations of self-interacting fields, or the presence of non-minimal couplings of this sector to gravity, either with a strong coupling or even quasi-conformal, in a variety of situations, it turns out that you always end towards the end of inflation, or just at the end of inflation, with an energy density which is of the order of 10 to minus 2, the Hubble scale to the fourth, times this small delta parameter. And I emphasize it's small, because in all these cases, it can never be bigger than 1. And now you don't understand what's the relevance of this, but you will see in few transparencies that it turns out to be quite relevant.
I thought, at least in the Ford case, that you basically couldn't get the complete decay of the inflaton. No?
You couldn't get the decay of the inflaton. Well, I mean, I haven't talked yet how to envisage reheating here. So all I'm saying here is that for free, you put one of these guys floating there and you get this energy density. Okay? Then we will see how we manage these guys to dominate and whether the inflaton decays or something else. Okay. So this little delta parameter here, all it does is to control parametrically what is the ratio, the gap, or the gap that is given by the ratio of the initial energy density in this radiation component to the total energy density. And actually, even in the best case scenario, if I were to saturate the upper bound from CMB observations in the Hubble rate of inflation, this ratio, or so this energy compared to the background energy density, it's always very, very, very small. Okay. So essentially, the standard picture I'm going to have, whatever was driving inflation doesn't really matter, is that when we finish inflation, at the end of inflation, we have a huge gap between this radiation species and then the inflaton background. Okay? So unless something special happens, typical redshifting of these two different sectors is such that it's going to maintain this gap. Maybe it will decrease it a little bit, maybe it will enhance it. This really depends on properties of the inflationary sector and this species here. Okay? But unless I do something special, and with this I will connect with the question of Scott, this gap is going to be there, and then I cannot reheat the universe. So this is a pity, no? Because we've produced these guys, say, for free. We know they are there. These are useful guys for Tommy, for instance, to do dark matter. But now remember, I want to do reheating of the universe. So I want these guys to dominate the energy budget of the universe. So how can we do this if there is no exchange of energy between the two sectors? Well, it turns out that actually the idea is pretty simple. So you take your favorite inflationary potential, or your favorite inflationary model, doesn't really matter. And instead of ending inflation by breaking of a slow roll, you introduce a feature in your potential such that you drop the height of this potential. And in that moment, the potential energy density that was driving inflation will become kinetic energy density. And when that happens, this is called kinetic domination, the energy density of this sector, of the inflationary sector, not only will correspond to the end of inflation, it would also redshift faster than radiation. Okay, for the extreme case, as A to minus 6. So, as a consequence, the original gap I had here is going to be reduced as time goes by, and eventually these radiation species are going to overtake. And this is the idea of gravitational reheating. That thanks to the fact that these guys feel gravity, there was excitation of them in first place during inflation or towards the end of inflation, and now thanks to the fact that I make the inflationary background to redshift faster than radiation, I get them to dominate at some moment the energy density of the universe, hence we have a successful reheating mechanism, don't we? Okay, so the idea is very simple. You can generalize it if you want by the following setup. All we need to consider is engineer a system or a potential such that at the transition end of inflation, it gives rise to a stiff equation of a state, which means to be bigger than radiation value, up to 1, such that at the end of inflation, this ratio is very suppressed, but when we finish this process, now we have an order 1 ratio, because we've made this radiation species to dominate the energy density of the universe. So the requisites for this to work correctly is to control cosmological perturbations and to make it finish before Vivian. Okay, that's simple in principle. So it is very easy to envisage these models, and this is what many people have been actually doing for a number of years. However, it was also well known, since also a number of years, at least 20, that if you have a stiff equation of a state, so equation of a state bigger than 1/3, you are going to enhance the gravitational wave background from inflation. Let me tell you a little bit why is that. So this is part two of my talk. Yes.
I have never really explored the stiff equation of state. So what happens to perturbations in the field itself, in the scalar field itself during this? Because you need a long period of this. So what happens to the equation in the field itself?
So here are two circumstances. You, at the end of the reheating process, you may be dominated by the perturbation that the inflaton created at superhorizon scales, or you may be dominated by the ones of your radiation field. So you have to make sure that if it's the ones of your radiation field, because it got fluctuations during inflation, you have to tune its parameters to give the right spectrum, the right amplitude, or otherwise to make them subdominant so that they just inherit the fluctuations that were there from the inflaton.
I think I was asking maybe a different question. During this domination era, what happens to the fluctuations of the scalar? How does that behave? Just
the fluctuation. So of what scalar? Sorry.
Phi dot right here, dominated by phi, the inflaton.
So the fluctuations of the inflaton.
Yeah, what happens to this time?
They scale the same as the background. They scale the same as the background, yeah. If they had not, if they would scale as radiation, then this wouldn't work, if this is what you're asking. They scale with the, so they represent just a small contribution, if you want, to the actual background energy density, but they scale the same manner. Yeah.
What's generating the curvature perturbation? So that's been generated by inflaton fluctuations, that, or are you going to talk about this?
No, I'm not going to be very specific, but you could either choose to do that or to provide it by this radiation, by this curvaton guy.
But you're claiming it is possible.
It is possible, yeah. Okay, but now let me discuss about gravitational waves in a general context of inflation, forgetting actually about gravitational reheating. So let us consider, for instance, similar plot to what Emma was showing this morning, which is the spectrum of the energy density of gravitational waves from inflation normalized to critical energy density today. As it is well known for all of us working in early universe, this is a quasi-scale invariant background of gravitational waves. But this is quasi-scale invariant background of gravitational waves today when I consider all these modes having crossed horizon during radiation domination. However, now I have, for a period of time, or I'm speculating with the idea that there is a stiff equation of a state. So what happens to the background? Actually, what happens is that you are going to uplift the high-frequency modes. So this is a cartoon picture, but you can do the proper computation. It takes a while, but you can really compute in detail the transfer function. And the mathematical result we get is the following. The spectrum today, the energy density spectrum of gravitational waves, whenever there is this stiff era, it's equal to the standard quasi-scale invariant plateau from inflation, or for the modes crossing during radiation domination, times a new transfer function, which can be split into window and a window function and a power law. So it really looks like this, okay, with some smooth curvature here. And this is not a question of whether I'm reheating the universe successfully with gravitational reheating or not. It's a question of having a stiff equation of a state for a finite period, okay? As finite as it is, I will have, the longer it is, more decades I will have here sustaining this blue tilt spectrum, okay? This blue tilt spectrum, the blue tilt branch, corresponds actually to modes crossing during a stiff era, whereas the plateau corresponds to modes crossing after we transit into radiation, and then the window is just the transition between the two eras, okay? Mustafa?
When does it become k cubed? F cubed? For what value of the equation of state? Does it ever become F cubed? Sorry.
F cubed, sorry.
Where omega are you? GW?
Yeah.
The power law, when? For what value of equation of state does it become F to the power 3?
It never happens, sorry. That's what I was understanding. So, what controls the tilt here is the equation of the state. actually the exact expression, I don't know why I put proportionality there, there is a factor 2 there. So the maximum number this can be is 1 for the super stiff case with equation of state equal 1. Okay, so that's the maximum slope you can have, 1. Now, the slope is controlled by the equation of state. The overall amplitude is controlled, again, by the typical energy scale of inflation, pretty much as the, in the standard case. And the transition frequency is really controlled by the length of the period we speculate with of a stiff domination. So overall, I have a spectrum today which is controlled by three independent, seemingly independent variables, the energy scale of inflation, equation of state of a stiff period, and duration of the period itself. So what about observability? Well, it turns out that for LISA, a huge fraction of parameter space is observable. So just think about this. The range of stiffness ranges from 1/3 to 1, and here we are saying that within LISA, we could observe up to a range down to below half. Okay, so a significant fraction of parameter space with a significant number of decades here in the pivot scale for the change of for the transition of regimes can be potentially observed with LISA. So for many years, this has been claimed to be an interesting signal that you could presumably see with LISA. The parameter space is very large. Okay, we don't really need to look into these numbers because now we can do following exercise. Yes.
If I'm going to have Canadian domination, then that's a situation where a field's rolling very fast, I assume.
No, actually, not that fast. It's just they control the whole energy, the storing kinetic degrees of freedom, but actually they have a lot of friction. They go decreasing much faster than normal.
Well, kind of, this thing roll for a long time. But you're telling me that that's always
That's not going to happen, but I'm also not sure that would be much of a problem. This is just a flat direction I'm putting there, you know. It really depends what is, let's say, other physics, whether you uplift that that tail or not, you know. But it really slows down very fast. But the point is the energy density is really dominated only by kinetic degrees of freedom. So now, a relevant question is that, why would I show you LISA if I can show you LIGO? Because if you think about it, there is this blue tilt branch of the spectrum, so we should be able to watch to see this with LIGO. Well, it turns out that the parameter space that LIGO could probe is also rather large. It's not as large as LISA, but it's still significant. So obviously, next exercise you would think is, okay, since LIGO has not observed nothing, this should be ruled out parameter space. Let me subtract it from the one LISA can really probe, and then we see what we are left with. But instead of doing that, actually, let me take another step in another direction and go back now to gravitational reheating and actually look at the consistency of gravitational reheating. So, part 3, the trouble with gravitational reheating. Now we know that in order to have under control a scenario, we need to control the perturbations, we need to make it finish before BBN, but we also know that there is such a distortion of the high-frequency modes of the gravitational wave tail that we should really take care of what's the energy density encoded or propagated by these gravitational waves. Why is that? Because there are observables, the most famous one, BBN itself, that tell us that there is a maximum amount of extra radiation we can tolerate in order not to spoil observations of BBN in particular. So with the actual input from latest CMB measurements of extra radiation component we can tolerate, essentially today we cannot tolerate any gravitational wave background larger than this limit. The integral of it should not be larger than 10 to minus 6. But now remember the ability of this background to really grow up even up to linear tilt. As Mustafa was asking me, what's the maximum tilt? It can be up to linear for the super stiff case, which actually is the most easy one to engineer, okay? Because it amounts to simply remove the potential. So we should definitely get worried about under what circumstances we are going to hit this bound. And this is what I'm going to do next. So let's think of this cartoon as our signal, which has the plateau from radiation modes and the tilt, the blue tilt from stiff modes. All I care about in order to see whether I violate these constraints or not is to see whether the amplitude at the maximum point, the maximum amplitude, saturates or violates or not this bound. So all I need to take care is to see whether the at the maximum frequency at which I sustain my background, what is the amplitude, whether it's bigger or not than the bound. And remember, this is monotonically growing signal, so I only care really about the evaluation of the background at this endpoint, high frequency endpoint of the spectrum. So this maximum amplitude, which depends on these three parameters, remember, energy scale of inflation, stiffness of the equation of a state during a stiff period, and frequency of the transition, which is nothing but what is the length of the amount of time I allow for the stiffness, has to be smaller than of the some number of the order of 10 to minus 6. This is what the bound is telling us. Okay. Now, remember that in gravitational rehearing, there was this small delta parameter that I was introducing before, and I told you that in a bunch of situations, very natural situations, essentially, it's always smaller than 1. Actually, it's difficult to make it of the order 1. But you could, but no more. This is the important point. And furthermore, in gravitational reheating, if you think about it, once you decide what is your energy gap, which is completely controlled by this small delta, and what's your energy scale of inflation, then the frequency transition is just a function of the Hubble scale and the equation of a state. Okay? So here is where it comes, the difference with respect to part two. Part two, I was being generic with the gravitational wave signal in the presence of a stiff period. But now I'm saying, I have a stiff period in gravitational reheating, which means the initial gap is fixed. And if the initial gap is fixed, once I choose a delta for whatever physical case, the time it elapses until I transit to radiation domination is also fixed. So essentially, this maximum of the spectrum, you can think of it as a function of these three variables, but they are not independent. So you can actually rather think about once you fix the initial gap, a small delta, then it will be a function of the Hubble rate and of the stiffness of the equation of a state. Okay, very good. What is the problem? The problem is you do the computation, and this certainly when I did it was not obvious to me at all why, but when you do the computation of this maximum amplitude, it turns out that this amplitude is independent of all the parameters you have there. The only dependence you essentially are left with is a small, well, inverse dependence with delta. It's not so small, but it's there. But delta is typically a fixed number for any given scenario. Okay? So why is it independent? Well, it's independent in the sense that the amplitude to this background is really given by a constant, so it doesn't depend on the energy scale, and it doesn't depend on the equation of a state. In reality, there is some mild dependence because there is some function very complicated that tells me there is some mild dependence on the equation of a state, but this is irrelevant. So if I show you a plot, what this, all of this really means is that the spectrum always ends in the same point, no matter what is the energy scale I started with, no matter what is the equation of a state I assume, as long as I finish before BVN, of course. This is my strong constraint. So this is what this really means, this independence. You always end here. Now the question is this point larger than the BVN limit, yes or no? So essentially, just to give you some insight, okay, why is this happening, that it doesn't depend on the parameter space that you thought would be relevant? It's simply because both the radiation component and the gravitational wave component are actually controlled by the same physics, the energy scale of inflation, and they both scale as radiation. So from moment one, in which I ended inflation, I have already this radiation component. I also have the highest mode of gravitational waves already behaving as a gravitational wave, and they are both scaling in the same manner. As a consequence, the ratio is constant. So now let's plug in, let's recall that this small delta parameter, what really controls is the ratio of the initial energy density in the radiation component to the total one. And let me remind you, that this is smaller than one. Well, here is the trouble. The maximum amplitude of the background you always produce independently of the parameters is just a constant divided by this delta. And in order not to violate the BVM bound, what you require is delta is of the order of 50 to 100, okay? So this is in flagrant contradiction with the starting point, which was that we have one of these fields freely wandering during inflation or even with no minimal coupling. It got excited, but the level of excitation actually is not enough. What we are really seeing here is that the amount of energy density stored in gravitational waves from the beginning is bigger. So essentially, you have a universe in which from the very early onset after inflation, you have your gravitational wave modes crossing horizon. They behave as gravitational waves in that moment. And then you have your radiation background. But there is a ratio of them maintained. And that ratio is gain, is a win, is dominated by the energy density of the gravitational waves.
That's what goes into this delta? I mean, what have you assumed about field content?
So for instance, this, in order to compute this delta, if you have a free field, it would go the number of e-folds. You have the free field wandering. If it has a mass, it will saturate at some moment. So you have what is the final amplitude of this freely wandering field during inflation. This will give you an amplitude. And this happens to give you delta. I think in that case was 0.01.
But if during inflation, if the Higgs has a bev, then I presumably break from Coulomb invariance and I generate the entire standard model, for example.
Yeah. Well,
if I put that in, I still...
I will go into the case of the Higgs in a moment. I will only dedicate one transparency. Hopefully, I can answer that to you. But it is actually very handy that the only real scalar field we know for sure, which is the Higgs of the standard model, will come into rescue of this scenario. But let me wait a few transparencies for that. Now, if I also analyze the equivalent similar constraints from CMB itself, actually the situation is even worse. I would require this small delta to be of order 200, okay? So at this point, okay, either we modify gravitational reheating or we give up on it. Either we modify gravity in inflationary sector. So remember I said I'm starting with Einstein gravity. Even if I had some minimal non-minimal couplings, I'm definitely with Einstein gravity. So either we really embed our inflationary sector in modified gravity so that we can reheat into those extra gravitational degrees, or, well, we can do the more traditional game that people have played for many years, me myself one of those, to reheat via couplings, okay? So this is the standard preheating scenario. We've heard a bunch of talks during this conference. If you want to modify gravity, well, up to you. I don't want to. I'm very happy with Einstein gravity. But surely some people have done it, and this is a way out to this problem, because you could definitely reheat the universe through these extra gravitational channels that you do not have in general relativity. And then either we could modify the idea itself of gravitational reheating. The first very simple modification, trivial modification, let me make 1,000 copies of these radiation fields. So this is a possibility. I find it very ugly, though. I find it very ugly because in order to have under control cosmological perturbations, which I didn't explain in detail because I don't have enough time, you need to tune the parameters characterizing these guys to specific values. So now you would need 1,000 copies of these guys with tuned values to the same order of magnitude. So if you like that solution, I don't, but it is a solution. A more beautiful solution, I believe, is the following, and this connects with the question of Peter. What about if I were to consider that this radiation field is going to be represented, as I said, by the only scalar that we are really sure about that it exists, that the Higgs of the standard model. So in order to do this properly, the first thing I need to do is to add a non-minimal coupling to gravity. Because without that, the typical strength of the running of lambda, assuming it's stable, it remains positive, is still not good in order not to spoil cosmological fluctuations, because it will pick up fluctuations during inflation. So the idea is you put a non-minimal coupling strong enough that you suppress fluctuations of the Higgs during inflation. Okay? Now you should ask me, isn't that a standard gravitational reheating that actually people work out with this non-minimal coupling? Well, this was another surprise to me, which is standard gravitational reheating with a non-minimal coupling was worked out wrong, not only because there is an excess of gravitational waves. It was worked out wrong because they assume that this field, chi, which for me is the Higgs, but it could be something else, is massless after inflation. And this is absolutely wrong. This is an interaction term with gravity, which provides a de facto mass. And this mass will become tachyonic just in inflation, after inflation, because as I flip the equation of the state into stiffness, it happens to flip the sign of curvature. So essentially, there will be a tachyonic period of growth of the Higgs itself at the end of inflation. And for some reason, if you go to the original papers, they never capture this. They are always thinking these are massless degrees of freedom, and they scale as radiation. This doesn't happen. What really happens is that there is tachyonic period. This will be stabilized by the self-interactions of the Higgs, so at some moment it stops. And then, from then on, it will oscillate around this quartic potential, and the oscillations around quartic potential correspond to radiation fluid. So actually, you do have a radiation fluid there, which actually will decay through parametric resonance into all the standard model species.
Wouldn't so, that interaction generate a positive mass term?
What interaction, sorry?
The last term. So you have an interacting theory of gravity.
Yeah.
So you generate some Kalman-Weinberg term.
I haven't checked into that. So that would be interesting to check. But if I write Bert Lagrangian like this, okay, I would say, you know, radiative corrections, typically from the standard model, would come into the running of lambda. I'm assuming I remain positive with the running, okay, with the value of lambda. And I don't think this will play any role into the running of lambda. I think it will be suppressed. But okay, we can discuss this because I haven't really worked it out in detail. So funny thing is that I work out this result, how to reheat the universe into the standard model of particle physics with Chris Burns 4 years ago, without realizing that we were correcting gravitational reheating. I was just not aware that people had got it wrong. Okay, I only became aware afterwards when I was studying these gravitational wave background issues.
I don't want to hold you up, but I think I missed something. Could you just repeat the argument again why the sign of the curvature flips?
Yeah, it's simply because, you know, this is sourced by whatever is your inflaton sector, okay? And essentially, I can parameterize, if you want, this is a function, curvature of the Hubble rate and second derivative of the scale factor. If you want, it's a function of the equation of a state. So it happens that for equations of a state that are stiff, it flips the sign. So you necessarily get a tachyonic instability there, which we've seen. I mean, I'm not showing you plots or results on this, but we've seen it both in the Lattice and both with analytical computation. So it's a matter of the equation of a state. When it becomes stiff, gives rise to tachyonicness here. I can show you the expression later if you want. So essentially now, because I regulate the tachyonicness with the self-interactions of the Higgs, I can have much larger small delta, and then gravitational reheating is okay. Okay, yeah. So final part, okay, in the last minute I have. Now, again, forget about gravitational reheating. Let's go back again to the idea that perhaps we had a stiff period in the universe, and this is unrelated to reheating. Okay, there is another problem that, to my amusement, also people seem not to have pointed out before, which is that the space, the parameter space, say this is the equation of the state versus the transition frequency, compatible with BBN, it's quite opposite to the parameter space that can be proved by direct detection experiments. So before I told you, well, since LIGO is telling me to rule out this, I said, wow, we should subtract it from here to see what LISA can observe. Well, now that we know that actually BBN itself puts constraints very stringent into what are the possible equation of the states I can tolerate, as long as they are stiff, what really happens is that there is no solution in parameter space that gives rise to an observable of background of this type in LIGO, even in the ultimate configuration of advanced LIGO, that would not violate BBN. So as a result, LIGO cannot really see consistently this background. What about LISA? Well, it turns out to be the case that there's a small corner here in parameter space that would be compatible with observation. But this is too sad, because if you think about it, now what we are saying is that you can only observe equation of the state that ranges from 0.56 to 0.46. So before we had the full range of values, Now we have very, very short range, which actually is even difficult to engineer from the side of a model building in inflationary setups. With this, I conclude outlook of what I told you. You see, to reheat without couplings requires imagination. And this imagination means to use gravity, okay, instead of having particle couplings directly. Either you engineer something like gravitational reheating, as I was describing, or you have to appeal to modify gravity. A standard gravitational reheating, as it was laid out already like more than 30 years ago, has this problem, this inconsistency, that it does create naturally too many gravitational waves, which is incompatible with current bounds. Therefore, whenever you would deal with an inflationary sector that is only minimally coupled to gravity, okay, doesn't sustain any modified gravity interactions, well, either, if you want to be consistent, either you really have to add modified gravity, either you consider of the order of hundreds of thousands of spectator fields with ad hoc tuning of their coupling, you know, such that you don't violate cosmological perturbations, or you could do perhaps what I was proposing, which is just to think of the Higgs of the standard model, which quite naturally, with a non-minimal coupling, provides you a setup which is compatible. Finally, independently of gravitational reheating, a stiff ERA in general is actually not observable at LIGO, because if it was, it would violate constraints, and is barely observable at LISA. So message to take home, if you go stiff, check your bounds, because you might be violating certainly some very basic constraints that you had not thought of, okay? Thank you very much. Good beer. Yeah.
All right, so questions for Danny. So I guess I had a question. So, I mean, is there anything to stop me sticking in, you know, a lot of copies of Tommy's idea or what Andrew was talking about, or is it just a matter of taste that you think that maybe I don't want to add?
It's a matter of taste.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a matter
but
of taste.
String theory has...
String theory provides that kind of naturally. It's not so clear to me whether, as I said, you know, one aspect that I didn't explain in detail is that the couplings, the parameters of these fields need to be tuned to very specific values. So for instance, if I have a self-interacting field, a lambda phi to the 4, this lambda has to be of the order of 10 to minus 14 if you want it to provide, not to spoil cosmological perturbations.
But why can't I just play the trick that Tommy played, right? And just have a mass that's greater than
if you provide a mass,
then I pay exponentially.
No,
I guess probably
you don't have the problem I've been explaining in gravitational reheating, because your radiation background will not be radiation anymore, will be a massive sector, but then you still need it to decay into radiation. So that's a game you can play, but there is an interplay between what choices of masses you make and what energy at the end of inflation you have from this free massive field.
So this might be adding too many tooth fairies, but is there a way to make the gravitational waves dissipate? That is, add some coupling where it takes away energy from the gravitational waves? Because the problem was arising because gravitational radiation and radiation was scaling the same way.
Yeah.
Is there any... these ideas that you talked about, modified gravity and so on,
Well,
is that the idea that you...
No, the idea in modified gravity is simply that you do have a manner to reheat the universe into this extra gravitational degrees of freedom without having couplings explicitly to other particle sectors. Still, you need to decay those gravitational degrees of freedom somehow into particle physics, which is never specified in those papers, okay? But at least in a scenario that I believe. But the idea is that in modified gravity, you can do that. In the absence of modified gravity, the only idea I'm aware of is this stiffness of the inflationary background.
But there's no way, I mean, I don't know if there are ideas out there, right? So making the graviton massive goes the wrong way.
Yeah.
Because it actually makes it more dominant, but yeah. Is there a way to make it actually redshift faster than 1 over 8 to the 4?
Gravitational wave. Well, you know, I mean, it's once you linearize Einstein gravity into transverse Rayleigh degrees of freedom,
normal gravity,
you know, these are very weakly coupled guys, you know, which just feel energy, momenta, transverse Rayleigh part of any anisotropic stress. You would have to introduce some anisotropic stress
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
That is there some
not obvious that I see, because typically that tends to contribute to produce more gravitational waves. But
with neutrinos, you
free streaming of neutrinos.
Yeah. So something like that could allow you to.
Well, this damp only very little bit the actual amplitude of the plateau. You know, a factor order. I don't remember the number, but very little in a very small range of scales. That I don't think this will affect the high frequency tail actually. Yeah. I think we, in our paper, in the second paper, we introduced that. We put a tilt to the gravitational wave background. We changed the number of degrees of freedom, things like that. Nothing changes the conclusion. Yeah.
But if you wanted to frame degenerative, wouldn't it be simpler to just introduce particle that becomes massive?
Yes. No. If you introduce some small mass, this probably would change the game. This probably would change. To be honest, you know, my original aim of these studies was just to study how we can probe this gravitational wave background in the presence of a stiff equation of a state. Then I encounter that this basic gravitational reheating scenario happens to give rise to this problem. And originally I got very excited because I thought, wow, I found a way to justify why we need couplings for the inflationary sector into particle sectors. But then you see there are other ways out. So it's not such a robust statement. I cannot make a robust statement saying, because of this problem, we need to couple the inflationary sector. But certainly it helps in that direction. You know, it really wants to tell us that you need couplings to do things in a simple way.
So what if there's a feature in the primordial tensor power spectrum, phase transition during inflation, or something else at the end of inflation that causes there to be some feature? Is that going to change the analysis a lot, or is it going to make it harder?
If that feature would somehow damp the modes at the highest frequencies, yes, okay? Because if you, let's say, actually, well, to be honest, you know, my analysis is based on using a slow roll all the way down to the end of inflation. If you do realistic quasi-slow roll systems, you know, towards the very end of inflation, you start breaking more and more the slow roll, so there's gonna be some damping. I need to analyze that in a specific manner with a specific potential, okay? So there could be some space there to avoid this problem, but you would need to damp the tail to orders of magnitude to avoid really the problem.
So just to make sure I understand, I mean, a simple solution to this problem would just be to have a scalar field dominate the energy density in the universe later on, but just the case of radiation, and then you would just be diluting this omega gravitational wave. So that would be a trivial way to solve this problem.
This would be a trivial way, yeah, if you have massive field free.
Later on
decays into something else, yeah. There is still an interplay about how big the mass is or how small to make it a valid scenario, but this should work one way or another to avoid the problem, yes. Yeah. But then you need to know how to couple these to other species, you know. What I like, but that's not so easy, that's what I'm saying. What I like about this solution with the Higgs is that the Higgs is, of course, naturally coupled to the rest of the standard model. So the standard model is actually produced naturally from the oscillations of the Higgs while it's subdominant, you know. And when you reheat through gravitational reheating like this, you emerge in a universe dominated already by the standard model, without assuming almost nothing, you know, just the non-minimal coupling of the Higgs.
Yeah. I have a question about the Higgs solution.
Yeah.
So if there's radiation around, in the standard picture, the Higgs mass also get a thermal correction that can make the effective m-square to be positive. I just wonder, is that a relevant effect, what you're saying?
So when the Higgs start oscillating, there is no radiation around in first place. It's the Higgs that is going to produce through parametric effects that radiation. Mm-hmm. Then there will be parametric resonance. You decay most of the Higgs into fermions, those that are coupled directly to the Higgs, and the electroweak gauge bosons that are coupled directly to the Higgs. And then you will produce a thermal plasma out of those particle species you produce.
Okay.
You know? So you will have a thermalized standard model floating at radiation degrees of freedom until they dominate the energy budget of the universe.
Right.
That's the idea.
I have a question related to Tom's. So you extrapolate the gravitational wave spectrum out to high frequency, but I suppose that eventually will cut off associated with the finite duration of inflation.
Yeah.
So if inflation just weren't to last very long, is it possible that there weren't any gravitational wave signal?
No, what happens in realistic scenarios, the only problem is you have to do it numerically in those cases. You have to take your inflationary potential, and then you have to let your field roll, okay, until you reach the end of inflation. So if towards the end of inflation you start breaking slow roll, you will start dumping the amount of gravitational waves you are producing. But the way I envisage in engineering these models, remember, is that I introduce a sharp feature breaking suddenly the potential. So essentially, I can easily consider this scenario such that I'm in a slow roll all the time, and all of a sudden, I transit to Keynesian domination because I introduce that as a feature. And in those cases, you know, and it really depends how you model that transition, there is no such a dumping, you know. But it's a model-dependent case, depending on how you model the transition into a stiff domination.
Yeah. All right, does anyone want to stand between us and the reception? All right, well, let's thank Danny again for an excellent talk, and everyone from the session.